I do this for my culture. Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me for the second hour of this very, very, very timely conversation as we're continuing to talk about the Kavanaugh hearings and the impact that it has made on the larger movement against sexual violence and sexual assault, particularly for black women. So I'm posing a question, folks. Should black women find some level of justice in this set of hearings, in these larger conversations right now, based upon Mr. Brett Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford? Joining me for this conversation has been Ms. Donna Owens, who is a writer who wrote a fantastic special report piece for Essence.com, and in talking about black women being active on the scene during the Kavanaugh and Ford Senate hearings. Also joining us is Ms. Brooke Butler, who is a reproductive justice advocate, and she is an organizer with the Black Youth Project 100 DC chapter. And she has been on the ground as well as a participant in this past weekend's March for Black Women to give us some more context about the larger movement and challenges facing black women, the LGBTQ community, and many other marginalized groups. So let's get back into the conversation. But I want to share a couple of comments, ladies, from our Facebook page, because people are just chomping at the bit about this conversation. Elaine checked in and says, quote, "I am really enjoying your program. Sharing this information is really needed. Big shout out to Ms. Donna Owens for sharing her knowledge and experiences with our community. Giving back is so awesome. Continue to educate and inform." Powerful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elaine. Dr. Kevin Daniels checked in and said, "I think this is an age-long issue for black women that's historically cumulative, whether Kavanaugh or Bill Cosby. Black women face a double-edged sword as being a woman but also black. In the past, these cases were normalized, and only recent is justice being served. My greatest concern is for our sisters, but also equity surrounding criminal charges against certain men." All right. Let's hear from Valerie, who checked in and said, "I will only say that the day that white women give up their soft power to promote white supremacy, will I stand in their fight of white-on-white sexual abuse. Until that time, I will only stand with black women in our fight. History cannot be denied or forgotten." Also, Ritzanya checked in and said, "Greetings. The male-dominating American culture is corrupt, disrespecting, and degrading against women." Dwayne checked in and said, "It is interesting to me that we delude ourselves thinking we can change a system that we have no control over. Black women are way too few to affect change without their brown, yellow, and white sisters. I know it is a romantic notion of doing it alone, but the numbers are just not there. Spiritually, yes. Politically, no." And you know what, Brooke, I'd like to get your thoughts on that in a few moments. And then Ritzanya also added, "Men's concept of women worth and values is to be barefoot and pregnant. No respect." Wow. Wow. Very, very tough analysis. But do you think, I want to go back to you, Brooke, really quickly in speaking about what Dwayne mentioned. But do you think that black women cannot do this thing alone? That the need of other women need to be involved in this to order to make that political impact. Do you agree or disagree with that?
No, I definitely agree with that. I, as an organizer, we do build across racial lines with people who are aligned with our values and beliefs to get things done. Like, that's a necessity regardless of population, particularly for those of us who are, considered more radical or left or whatever. Because the reality is, the majority of people don't feel the same way we feel about a variety of issues.
Yeah.
So that's definitely like something that we all consciously consider, and we do work together to build the world we want, to fight against the things that we don't.
Sure.
I also wanted to know the conversation around justice and criminalization, particularly in the context of Bill Cosby or R. Kelly or anyone else who does. Like, to be clear, Bill Cosby harmed women of a variety of races, to be clear. But also, like, we cannot get caught up in wanting to engage things the way the systems or white people do. I'm very bothered by people who consistently try to divert attention from what Bill Cosby or any other black person who's harmed black people does by noting that white people got away with it. Because our goal should never to be like harmful white people who get away with things. Our goal should be to be better than that. Definitely want to focus on creating cultures and societies that prevent these things from happening in the first place,
but
then ensuring accountability and justice when they do, regardless of racial identity, but particularly recognizing, right, the criminal justice system is extremely racist, and that may often mean that people of color are criminalized more often for things are harsher, and that it is not okay.
Yeah.
I, again, am a part of an abolitionist organization, so we do not push for policing or incarceration for things. Like, we largely advocate for restorative and reparation.
Yeah.
For our community, recognizing the varieties of traumas and things that we all hold as black people, especially in this world. But just want to offer that we cannot seek to avoid or ignore or dismiss the harm being done by black people simply because white people are getting away with it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to go back to the phone lines, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Paul out of West Baltimore. Paul, thank you for your great patience, sir. What's your take on this, Paul?
Well, how you doing, Roger?
I'm good.
Yes. I'm in agreement with them. You know, this good old boy thing. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we heard you. We hear you loud and clear, Paul.
This good old boy thing. You know, the Congress, the stand, and that mindset and how they do it. It's still kind of like their world. And they in control of their women to their women, as what we've seen with the election and Trump in there. I believe Kavanaugh needs to get the same thing that Bill Cosby got, which he shouldn't have gotten. 14 years and can't prove it. Man, she said that prosecutor might have said that you couldn't prosecute him when he went to jail if we was in court. But she did not say that he wasn't guilty of doing it. And until they supervise those fraternities and things like that, we're going to continue to have wild parties and things like that. And we like you say, the different tiers of things like that, where it could be, because you got money, it could be brushed underneath for the rug and things of that nature. But I believe truly that with all the women, and especially the black women, we're going to talk about black women spend a lot of money in the economy. And if they want to hurt them, they really want to hurt them, let's just stop spending that money for a while.
So you're saying a certain level of boycott. Like, but what would you boycott?
Get mad. We got to seriously get mad like it was in the slavery days. And everybody's got to come out. Can't nobody over there partying. You know, we got to have 95% of the people backing our women, our ladies, and things like that.
Gotcha. Paul from West Baltimore. You're welcome, Paul. Thank you so much for checking in. Well, I mean, I think it's, Don, I think he, you know, it's a hard thing to try to reconcile, considering that, one, this problem is cultural, two, this problem is legal, and three, this problem is human.
Yeah, absolutely, Faraji. Well, you know, I want to touch on what you said, cultural, legal, and human. One of the things that one of your callers referenced earlier were judicial appointments. And, you know, I've done some reporting from the White House and the Supreme Court, and I wanted to give a little more context and background about President Obama's appointments to the lower courts as well as the high court, because your caller referenced that, you know, people were not up in arms when Barack Obama did not nominate an African-American woman to the Supreme Court. Mm. I just want to respectfully say that, you know, in my reporting, there were women, African-American women, lawyers and others, who were very much pushing President Obama behind the scenes as it related to trying to get an African-American woman on the Supreme Court. But President Obama had a very significant impact on the federal bench. 19% of his judges were confirmed, and they were African-American, compared to 16% under President Bill Clinton and 7% under President George W. Bush. And in fact, more than 300 judges were nominated by President Obama, and they were considered to be the most diverse group in U.S. history in terms of gender and ethnicity and nationality. He literally elevated hundreds of African Americans and other lawyers of color to the nation's federal courts. And, you know, so that's a very key component when we're talking about justice. You know, right now, the courts, of course, the nominees that are being brought for judicial appointments are coming from President Trump. And, of course, his critics allege that he is stacking the court with conservative judges like a Brett Kavanaugh. So this, you know, this is a cycle. This is, again, part of our democracy. And, again, it is something that, you know, Americans who vote and Americans who are active, like Brooke, as organizers and so forth, have the power to continue to impact with their voices.
But Donna, isn't this a biased interpretation of democracy that we're like playing with a very principle? I mean, the principle of democracy is essentially rooted in, you know, governance for the people, by the people. Okay. But then now when you start cutting it up into or based upon party lines and affiliations and relationships and friendships, it becomes very biased. It becomes distorted. It doesn't become a government of for the people, by the people. It becomes a government of who I like and what you can do for me.
Well, that's a whole nother conversation.
It's a whole nother conversation, Donna Owens.
For another segment, perhaps.
But I mean, here's the thing. The reason I'm bringing that up is because it's so debilitating, especially in this country. Here we have a situation of a woman who's making a very, very serious allegation, right? And I, you know, right. I mean, she could have all of these relationships and who her family members are and all of those things. But at the end of the day, she made a very serious allegation. We saw this with Anita Hill, right? And so this is not just an allegation thrown at a FedEx worker or somebody that this is an individual who is up for nomination for the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court, and deciding to make an allegation that she feels is the right thing to do, and to do it understanding that she's going to be scrutinized, ostracized, maligned in the process, right? And so we're in this space now where if we get caught up in the politics of it, that we're going to essentially lose sight of the humanity of this particular moment. This is much bigger than politics. I want to play this clip from SNL. They did a skit on Mr. Brett Kavanaugh's hearing. I want to play a little bit of this clip, and this speaks volumes about the point I'm making here. Check this out, folks.
I'm here tonight because of a sham, a political con job orchestrated by the Clintons, and George Soros, and Kathy Griffin, and Mr. Ronan Sinatra. Now, I am usually an optimist. I'm a keg is half full kind of guy. But what I've seen from the monsters on this committee makes me want to puke and not from beer. Dr. Ford has no evidence, none. Meanwhile, I've got these. I've got these calendars. These beautiful, creepy calendars. About lifting weights with PJ and Squee and Donkey Dong Doug. But you don't care about Squee or Donkey Dong Doug, do you? You just want to humiliate me in front of my wife and my parents and Alyssa friggin' Milano?
That was Saturday Night Live featuring Mr. Matt Damon playing Mr. Brett Kavanaugh in a skit that aired this past weekend. and Donna and Brooke, when the skit was hitting on all the notes, but at the same time, the satire makes me want to ask the question, is this too early, especially about such a very, very important conversation that now folks are laughing at this situation and not fully taking in the gravity of this particular situation, this particular case, how it plays out on reproductive health and reproductive justice, how it plays out in the legal realm, how it plays out politically, and most importantly, how it plays out in men and the relationships that men have with women. Am I looking too deep into this, Donna?
Well, you know, I want to take you back to the actual hearings on Thursday. And, you know, one of the things I reported in my article for Essence.com is that, you know, I sat in the public space with, you know, members of the public who had stood in line, many of them for hours. People arrived at 3 and 4 in the morning and so forth so that they could attend the testimony in these hearings. And I literally, you know, was listening during both Dr. Blasey Ford and Kavanaugh's testimony. You could hear a pin drop in the room, but then at certain points, people were groaning. There were people who were crying.
Yeah.
There were certain points in the testimony when Kavanaugh spoke that people were laughing in disbelief. There were a range of emotions in that room. In fact, it became, I don't want to say raucous, that's not really the best characterization, but there was enough commotion that the security team of police, Capitol Police, who were sort of manning all of these proceedings, you know, had to come in and sort of remind people, you know, please, you know, we can't have sort of the emotion. So I think people are thinking of this in very human terms. You know, whether it's too soon to be parodied on Saturday Night Live, I don't know. You know, Saturday Night Live does what they do, and
right.
They provide comic relief. And certainly this is an issue that's so serious that some may say that perhaps it's too soon for that, but I'm not the arbiter of that. That's not my lane.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to get back to the lines. Omar from Baltimore, thank you for your great patience. What's your take on this, Omar?
Yes, I want to answer your question, Mr. Muhammad, and greetings to you. I want to answer your question first. How should Afro-American women look at this or use it? It can only be a stepping off point. And because the large tragedy has yet to be mentioned in many of these conversations. You noticed how Lindsey Graham and others defended Mr. Kavanaugh. Imagine if 40 years ago, the daughter of Strom Thurmond, the black daughter, had come forward and Strom Thurmond had denied it. Well, I would imagine that Lindsey Graham and a whole bunch of other Southern white men would have denied it and denied it, but the DNA would have proven otherwise. In fact, Strom Thurmond was so old when his black daughter came forth that the family just, they knew it, they admitted it, and just dealt with it by basically appropriating it. So what I want to say is that what has not been mentioned, and why I say it's a stepping off point, is the fact that Afro-American and African women have frequently been the pawns of white men and have borne the children either out of violent rape or statutory rape, being underage, like Miss Washington's mother, who was impregnated by Strom Thurmond when she was 16, or if you want to talk about psychological rape, those women who entered into relationships thinking that having a relationship with a white male is going to get them something more, or having children with lighter skin is going to get them something more. So what I'm trying to say is that this issue about sexual assault coupled with racism and imperialism, because it didn't only happen in North America, it happened in South America, it happened in the Caribbean, is something that we have not talked about. No one in all of these conversations that I've been listening to the last couple of weeks have brought up the fact that Afro-American women and African women before them, before we were quote-unquote Americans, had been subject to sexual violence, sexual assault, mm-hmm. having children by European males, and having those children even sold off into slavery. And I'm not going to say any more, but it would be very interesting, other than to say, rather, that if we did DNA tests on many of the white families in the South, prominent families, and did families on a whole bunch of black people in the South, we would be able to find out who is related to whom, and that's a reparations issue, because I dare say that a lot of these white families, some of whom are probably in politics now,
yeah.
would try to hide that. They would pay people off, or you could bring the South down.
Omar, thank you so much for checking into the conversation. And, well, you now just brought that point up here on this platform on WEAA on For the Culture, and I'm happy that you did because there is a historical context. Brooke, I know that you have to get off, but give us some insight as to what accountability should look like at this point, given that historical context that Omar brought up and given the fact that we are in a much different space than we were in 1991 culturally. So what does accountability look like in 2018 for black women than those who have been victimized by sexual assault and sexual violence?
I think that's a bit of a longer conversation, but I think in this particular moment, right, around Kavanaugh, it would look like him not being confirmed, him being not even like removed from the process at this point. I think that generally we're talking about like whole cultural shifts. For like what to me what justice is, because I'm a wholehearted believer, you know, like an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure, and we often are responding to things. I think that we're building a world in which we ground everything in respect and caring for one another in consensual relationships, even beyond just the idea of sex, but like what does it mean to ask people before you hug them, before you touch them, to allow people to have their boundaries and say no without an issue. And building a world that looks different is like the major piece there. I think there's obviously legislation that can happen at the state level, at the local level, at the federal level, around sexual harassment, around sexual assault. It's investing money into organs that do that work around violence prevention, around remedying and helping survivors. I'm always, I'm a big reparations person, so I'm glad someone did mention that. Definitely believe in reparations across the board for a variety of harm that's been historical and cultural in America, particularly. I definitely think noting the global reality for women and violence against women and violence against black women is definitely important to note. So I thank the caller for bringing that up as well. I think that there's a variety of things that accountability could look like for us, but it is something that we have to work on and be intentional about and really be prepared to do. Because I think I say accountability and it sounds like a one-off thing, but that's a process that takes forever.
Love
right?
it.
And not something that you just do one time like an apology,
right?
Accountability is a full shift in your behavior, in your thinking, in the way our world looks.
Brooke Butler. Thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. Brooke Butler is a reproductive justice advocate. She's a member of BYP 100 DC chapter. Donna Owens, I know you got to jump off. What is the accountability looks like for those women that you talk to? Is it not just confirming Mr. Brett Kavanaugh? Is there something more? What does that look like, Donna?
Well, Faraji, I'm speaking with a lot of the women. Most of the African-American women that I met on Thursday were pro Dr. Blasey Ford. It's not to say that there were not African-American women there who perhaps may have been supporting Kavanaugh, because I know that there are African-American Republicans, and there are some who are indeed supporting Kavanaugh. Condoleezza Rice, our Secretary of State, a former Secretary of State, as we all know, African-American woman, was one of the early supporters of Kavanaugh, and she actually testified back during those hearings in September. So Kavanaugh does have, some African-American support, perhaps in some quarters. I'm not going to say it's significant. Based on what I reported on Thursday, most of the African-American women were supporting Dr. Blasey Ford. And for many of them, it was a larger issue, as your callers have talked about, around, historical narratives around African-American women and race and rape and all of those things. And these are very, very heady topics that can't be dissected in a, day-long hearing on Capitol Hill. These are conversations that the American people are going to have on an ongoing basis.
Absolutely. You know what, Donna? You are absolutely right. I love that you and Brooke talked about that this is going to be a process, because we didn't get here by one day. We got here after years and years and years of injustice and abuse we got here. Donna Owens, how can people find your latest news piece, this special report?
Well, thank you. I'm on LinkedIn under Donna M. Owens, O-W-E-N-S. I also, you can find my work on Essence.com and many other news organizations. So thank you so very much for this wonderful time to talk about these pivotal issues for Raji.
Donna Owens, thank you so much, and I hope to have you back on. I know that you are always busy. So we hope to bring you back on.
I try for Raji.
That's a new one. I try to stay busy. I hear that. Donna Owens, thank you so much for checking in on For the Culture here on WAAA. All right, folks, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm not forgetting the conversation. So Linda, Valerie, Willie, Dwayne and Ernest, I'm going to get you your thoughts. I'm going to continue to share your post on our Facebook page at For the Culture 88.9. We're going to try to figure out, find some reconciliation for this conversation. So we'll do that in the last 30 of For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. We'll be right back.
I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in. Man, oh man, there are so many layers to this conversation, folks, as we're talking about should black women find justice in this these Kavanaugh hearings as black women continue to fight against sexual violence and sexual assault. And we just finished talking to Ms. Donna Owens, who is a writer with Essence and Essence.com, and she posted a special report. Great, great story. She talks to women who were on the scene on Thursdays for Thursday's hearing with Dr. Ford, and Mr. Kavanaugh had testified. And we finished talking to Ms. Brooke Butler from the Black Youth Project 100 DC chapter. And for me, folks, to hear these women talking about their experiences and the experiences of other women, I really want to key in on the accountability part, which is that this is going to be a process. Now, I threw it out there, that particular stat, that about 2-4% of men who are brought to justice actually, and who are the perpetrators of these heinous acts, are actually convicted. 2-4%. And let's not even talk about the impact and the role of class, the impact and the role of history. So there is still a lot of work to be done. And I don't think, as a man, as a black man, I don't think I'm in any position to necessarily say what I think what black women or any other woman should do to find justice. I think that as men, the best place that we can be is to the back and just being supportive of women and not assume that women don't know what they want, but they don't know how to get what they want. I think that it's important for us to just be there and support, to use our resources, to use our platforms, to use our voice, to just be there. Let's go back to the lines because I want to continue to have this conversation as folks are continuing to check in. Let's go to Valerie out of Baltimore. Valerie, thank you for your great patience. What's your take on this, Valerie?
I would love to have asked this question to your guests.
Yes, ma'am.
And, when we're having conversations regarding women, mm-hmm. I think you should take more women's calls. And I know it's kind of difficult, but My thing was, is I have a question, because what amazes me is how black women always are the ones who support, you know, women in general, regardless mm-hmm. of race. And when there's a sexual predator involved, for instance, we did support Hillary Clinton overwhelmingly mm-hmm. for the presidency. So we weren't going to elect a sexual predator. Roy Moore in the Doug Jones race, black women showed up there. We are very, very adamant about not supporting a sexual predator. And I think it has a lot to do with our history. My Absolutely. Question was for them is, why aren't white women, you know, the same? How come somehow or another, regardless of how much proof that's out there that shows that this person is guilty of, you know, something, sexually assaulting someone or whatever Donald Trump did to the women, they will vote for that person regardless. And I just I don't understand how they would expect for us to support them when they don't support themselves, you know. I just don't understand it.
Valerie, I'm questioning because I want to get clarity, not because I necessarily know the answer, but I do want to get some clarity about: do you think that white women, in this particular context, they are looking for support from black women?
I can't tell.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I can't tell.
I don't think so. I don't think they're looking for support from black women, and especially, I mean, the ones who are actually claiming sexual assault. They don't need our support. They're white women, you know. And Anita
Hill. Well, what do you mean by they don't need our support?
They're white women.
The only reason I'm pushing back because I want us to be.
It's like when we make an accusation, we're not going to be believed. We need Anita Hill needed a lot of support.
Honestly, Dr. Ford is not believed either by some.
Oh, she has a lot of support.
She has a lot of supporters, right?
Yeah,
right.
There was no Me Too movement back then. Oh, she has a lot of people writing letters. You don't need to hear anybody writing a letter for Anita Hill. But the guys, you know, the whole thing is that they just played the game and went along with it, and they were going to elect Clarence Thomas, and they knew they were, just like they're going to elect this guy. But, you know, the thing is that white women have to, 4% of us voted for Hillary? I mean, it's just like we...
But that's the thing, though. Okay, so here's the thing, because if we're talking about that level of politics, Valerie, just as much as you talked about the white women that supported Donald Trump, President Trump, there was a very large number of black women that supported Hillary Clinton, because I think that black women in some way, shape, or form conflated... Hillary Clinton was able to use that platform of being a woman in a male-dominated sector of politics and was able to garner that level of support from black women, even though her husband's policies were very detrimental to black men in the black community. So there's something that was going on there, just as much as you said there's something that's going on with white women and their support of President Trump.
No, and her husband also... had a sexual relationship with a woman.
Absolutely.
While he was in office.
Right. Know? So that's what I'm saying. I think that it's at the end of the day, yes, I think that there is still a huge divide between black feminism and white feminism in this country. I see that. I recognize that. I agree with that. But then I also think that that is counterintuitive and counterproductive, given the fact that men are still in a space of thinking that they own women and that they have agency to a woman's body. And I think that's the larger conversation. But I do believe, and I'm right there with you, Valerie, that I do believe there needs to be some reconciliation between black women and white women in this respect of the understanding womanhood. Now, I might be off base on that one. But if we're talking about progress, and you heard our guest Brooke Butler mention the fact that she believes that all women need to be there, to be present, to make that impact and to make that statement politically. Do you agree with that, Valerie? Okay, it looked like she was cut from the line. All right. Well, I think you brought up a great point on that. Let's go back to the phone line. Let's go to Ernest from downtown Baltimore. Ernest, what's your take?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
First of all, let me clear something up about Strom Thurmond. I heard an interview with Miss Washington, his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She said that when her mother got pregnant and had a baby, they had to leave South Carolina. I think they went to Delaware. But Miss Washington said the whole time they were in Delaware, Strom Thurmond supported her and her mother, giving her cash. He would never write them a check, but would give them a cash. And as she got older and her mother moved to California, she would get a plane, meet Strom Thurmond in South Carolina, and he would give her an envelope full of cash, and she would go back to what's it called? In other words, he was in her life the whole time, supported her, her husband, and the children. And when she was old enough to go to college, he took her to, I think it was South Carolina State, the black college down there.
I mean, okay. So you're bringing this history up for what, Ernest? For what point?
Well, the guy, Strom Thurmond probably hated black people because he always talking against them. But his daughter and her mother and her children and her husband, according to Miss Washington, he took care of all of them from the money that he was making.
Okay. All right. So that's the point. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing is, this Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, he passed a law that any American can be locked up, taken away out of this country, and never brought to trial. He passed a law and said that he did it, but don't intend on using it. No habeas corpus, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that killed Alawaki, his daughter, his son, and their cousins with a drone.
Okay.
So Barack Obama, he was following the thing of George Herbert Walker Bush, G.W. Bush, and Barack Obama. They had the same plan and they talked the same language.
Of course.
New World Order.
Okay. All right, I'm going to stop you right there because I got to get to my other calls, Ernest, but I appreciate you. But I want us to stay focused on this part of the conversation, not on the president or even Strom Thurmond. But I'm trying to ask the question, should black women find justice in this Kavanaugh case? Is this another stepping stone toward getting justice for women? And I'm going to go back to the phone lines on that. That other stuff doesn't affect me. Let's go to Dwayne out of Baltimore. Dwayne, talk to me.
The answer to your question is no.
No.
Black women should not look for justice because there's no justice there. This is not an issue for black women and justice. These are political games on a much higher level than black people. Now, with that being said, should black women participate? Yes, they should. Because, see, unfortunately for us as black people, you know, our burden in this country as not being the people of power is we have to participate in righteous issues, in righteous challenges. When challenges of righteousness come up, we have to participate. Because if we don't, what is going to happen? We're going to get left out.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
You know, white women, white men, white people in general are a protected class.
okay? They are a protected power class. Okay, you have to let that sink in. They're a protected power class. They're not a racial minority. They're a racial majority. So they have the power, and they protect themselves with that power. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So we have to participate. We have to march. We have to do everything, because if we don't, when they decide to pass out, okay, these are the bennies, these are the rewards of the effort, then we're going to get left out. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Our burden is to participate, okay? And we're not going to see the kind of justice that you're kind of alluding to until we get to a place where we have enough power where we can make some power demands, but we're just not there.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. And you know, Dwayne, that's the thing. That is the point, like making a power demand. Aligning ourselves or putting ourselves in a power position. That's the whole part about this, right? And trying to figure out where does that start and how do we get there? That's the strategy. And I think that is the conundrum that we find ourselves in, because I don't know.
Well,
if this is the case, like, you know, if this was Anita Hill today, then I think we would probably all say yes. I don't know. Well, we may not. I mean, because it was a black woman making some serious allegations against a black man, a powerful black man.
Yeah, if it was Anita Hill today, the power dynamics would be different.
Much different, yeah.
It would be much, much different. I mean, as a matter of fact, I'm so glad that it's not Anita Hill today. Good Lord, it would be crazy.
Right.
But you know, our Republican brothers and sisters, you know, they want their guy in there for much bigger reasons than, you know, the politics of men and women.
Yeah.
And we all know that.
Yeah.
Okay. But the answer to your question is no. You know, the social justice for black people, black women, you know, we are decades off from full social justice for black women. But black women still have to participate, because as they're laying that concrete of what social justice looks like for women,
yeah,
black women are also included.
Absolutely. Dwayne from Baltimore, always good to hear from you. Let's go to our new caller, Anna, out of Towson. Anna, thank you so much for checking in and enjoy your patience. What's your take on this, Anna?
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
I call as a white woman, as a Jewish woman, mm-hmm. and I certainly agree with Dwayne that I enjoy a lot of protection and a lot of privilege, through which I am both grateful and humiliated.
Wow.
And I do feel very disheartened by some of the generalizations that have been made by some callers today. I was out something for Ben Jealous yesterday. I made calls, had a house party for him. I think it's unfortunate when we make divisions between that are strictly along class or along religion. I hope that we can work together. I think, to me, it's interesting to be asking about black women supporting or standing against the Kavanaugh case. I feel like Kavanaugh is just such bad news for so many working class Americans, anyone who cares, who needs health care, who is and wants to have good labor law, minimum wage, anyone who's not in the upper echelons of our society, it stands to be hurt by Kavanaugh. And you know, quite frankly, I just think we might be lucky if his moral failings allow us to prevent someone with his political leanings to become in such a great position of power, well, a horrendous position of power. So that's all for me.
So no, and I really appreciate you for checking in and sharing your thoughts and your insight. I mean, the fact that you recognize that you have this privilege. But that you say that you enjoy, but you are also humiliated by, I think that speaks volumes. So is this particular case, is this the case? Well, first, let me start here. There was throughout tonight's conversation, we're talking about the alignment of black women and white women in the larger, to address the larger challenges of womanhood. But we are in a time and in a space where there is a black form of feminism as much as there is a white form of feminism. First, mm-hmm. Do you agree with that analysis that there needs to be a coming together based upon being a woman Or are we better being separate and kind of working on these things, and eventually we may meet at the end?
I think we are so much better off together. I think sometimes there's a need, like there, when if there are groups that recognize truly where we all stand in society in terms of our privilege or our desire for respect and privilege, then when you can have a coming together of people who are able to recognize that and stand together and say we all deserve to be respected and we all deserve to be privileged. And that if we can fight together, find that common ground and fight together, that I think we're so much stronger.
Yeah.
I also very much understand that we can't always do that. I mean, there are a lot of white women I can't stand next to in a picket line because they won't stand with me or because their position is very foreign to me. I don't understand it.
Sure.
I think
it's absolutely interesting to say the least, because we're in this space and we still haven't moved, Anna. That's the thing. We really haven't even moved the needle. When Anita Hill made that statement saying that that the Senate Judiciary Committee still lacks a protocol for vetting sexual harassment and assault claims that surfaced during a confirmation hearing suggests that the committee has learned little from the Thomas hearing. We still haven't moved. And that was 27 years ago.
Yeah,
and still making a point that some of the same individuals that were on that committee 27 years ago are on this committee now. We still haven't moved, Anna. I'm trying to understand, like, what is it going to take? And now we're at this place where Mr. Kavanaugh is a Supreme Court nominee, is back in the spotlight, and it's like we're repeating history, have yet to learn the true lessons from 27 years ago.
It is. It's hard to believe. It's just hard to believe. I would say, talking to my family, I'm like, well, what if we had like a buying strike? What if we could organize a buying strike and like no one will, like, you know, not everyone would do it, but what if like 30% of the population said on this day every week, we're just not going to buy anything. Maybe the corporations would hear us.
Please enlighten me, Anna. What did your family say when you brought up this great idea?
Well, my family is very aligned with my thinking. So
okay, all right, great. That's good.
They are. So, I mean, they don't think that would work. They're pretty pessimistic. They're like, you're never going to get people to do it.
Never going to get. Anna, thank you so much. That's how they treat you. Like, thank you so much for your time, and you appreciate you. Yes, but that will never happen.
Thank you.
Anna, thank you so much for checking in and sharing your thoughts. Let's go to Ms. Linda out of Gwin Oak. Ms. Linda, thank you for your great patience. What's your take, Ms. Linda?
Okay, good evening, and God bless to you and everyone. And I just want to say that justice is going to be served. It's a new day. And God is in control. And I don't care what color your skin is, ladies, they are strength and unity. Faraji, many people that you see living homosexual, you know, lives, life of homosexuality is because they were, you know, touched, abused, raped, and all kinds of, you know, suffered. You know, incest and all kinds of things, and that's male and female. But all I know is that there is a cleanup going on, and the tables is turned. God says enough is enough. Many women have kept quiet because they didn't think they was going to get the justice anyhow, and especially the black women. But justice is going to be served. And I don't think that they should be laughing about, the situation.
Sure.
Like you said, it's a little early to be laughing because God will do everything he can. You know, his judgment he'll judge and send women to divorce before he actually destroys, you know, the
people. I hear that. Ms. Linda, got to let you go, but I thank you so much for checking in and always giving us some of that passionate spirit that you have. Clarence, you're going to end it out tonight from Northwest Baltimore. Talk to me.
Hey, Faraji, do you think that if this shoe were switched around and were the other foot, that the Democrats were trying to put their candidate on, that they wouldn't defend their candidate in view of the against the same allegation.
I'm sure.
The power structure is telling us women in general they don't care. Okay, it's not an issue to them as long as they have their way within the power structure.
And see, Clarence, that's the part that is so detrimental. We can't talk about anything else except that when you are full throttle and getting your way instead of the way of the, and that's in the best interest of the American people. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's more destructive than having a terrorist.
Exactly. And as far as black women are concerned, black women, if your voice gets, the echo of your voice reaches the power structure as opposed to white women who share the same house with the power structure, good luck with that one. You are on your own out here. Your voice does not carry the same weight as white women. What you can basically do is step aside and let the fight for women's justice be amongst white people and reap the benefits of it, because you can't take the lead and your voice be heard with the same weight as theirs. Thanks, Faraji.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for checking in. I want to end it like this, because I think Miss Anita Hill brought up something. She said this: with the current heightened awareness of sexual violence come heightened accountability for our representatives. To do better, the 2018 Senate Judiciary Committee must demonstrate a clear understanding that sexual violence is a social reality to which elected representatives must respond. A fair, neutral, and well-thought-out course is the only way to approach Dr. Blasey and Judge Kavanaugh's forthcoming testimony. The details of what the process would look like should be guided by experts who have devoted their careers to understanding sexual violence. The job of the Senate Judiciary Committee is to serve as fact finders to better serve the American public, and the weight of the government should not be used to destroy the lives of witnesses who are called to testify. Accountability, folks. If we allow this moment to be a very politically biased, partisan moment, then guess what? We will be used as tools for our own destruction. The integrity of this court, the Supreme Court, the integrity of our laws and our political system, the integrity of democracy that we say that we believe in and that we hold true and that we think that is the greatest form of government, all of that is going to be questioned. Because at the root of democracy, at the root of governance, is people. Not money, not assets and liabilities, not property, but it's people. And if we can't create a safe space for people to share, but most importantly, to get justice when they felt like they have been wrong or that a grievance has been imposed upon them, then we cannot say that we are truly for the sustainability of this country. We can't say it. And unfortunately, if we're having this conversation with so many layers that addressing so many issues, this just goes to show that we have not truly learned from the past and that we have not fully matured into being a very democratic system, a very democratic form of government, and most importantly, we have not matured as citizens. And if our political officials are deciding to do things because of what's in the best interest of the party instead of the best interest of the people, then we should all fight. We should all fight. We should all speak. And we should all stand for what's right. With that being said, I appreciate all of you for being a part of the conversation. I appreciate you all for checking in on our Facebook page. Let's continue the conversation, continue to share the videos, continue to have the conversation, and just let's continue to do our part. Let's continue to do our part. I want to thank my very special guest, Ms. Donna Owens, writer for Essence Magazine and Essence.com. Check out her piece, The Special Report, as she talks about the impact of the Kavanaugh hearings on Black women. I want to thank Ms. Brooke Butler from Black Youth Project 100 for their insight, and I certainly want to thank you. Also, got to thank my dynamic production team, Ms. Mallory Pinkert-Pierre, Alex Blanc, my production assistants, Jalen and Daryl, and my engineer tonight, Drede, for making me sound so good. Make sure you continue the conversation on our social media platform at For The Culture 88.9, also at Faraji Muhammad, F-A-R-A-J-I-I-M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D. Up next is In The Groove with Don Black, giving that cool jazz for your evening. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to having another set of great conversations tomorrow on For The Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. And remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace.